Welcome to the second episode of Double Sheelix. If you haven't listened to the first episode of the podcast, hosted by Sally Winkler, be sure to find it in our archives. Today I talk with Katie Lasson, a scientist, entrepreneur, and great friend of mine. Originally from the Atlanta area, Katie earned her bachelor's and master's in biomedical engineering from Georgia Tech and is now living in Norfolk with her husband, Jamie. I met Katie 4 years ago when we both moved to London for research fellowships. And I first met Katie when she was standing at the entrance to our flat, suitcase and purse in hand. Honestly, my first impression of her was, dang, this girl knows how to pack. I, on the other hand, had brought many more bags. Katie, our friend Catherine, and I lived in a super tiny but conveniently located flat for a year while we worked at Imperial College. One of the first questions I like to ask people I speak with is how they first got interested in science.
Definitely outside influences. Neither of my parents were in science or engineering, and I didn't really realize it was an option for me until late into high school. So I knew I was good at math and science. Just because my teachers were putting me in the advanced classes. but I always kind of just imagined, like, yeah, maybe I'll be a teacher or maybe, like, a veterinarian. Those were about the only, like, careers I knew of. For an extra credit, one of my teachers had us go down to an outreach event that was hosted at Georgia Tech. So I was being the goody-goody I was. I, of course, was going to get extra credit. I'm so glad I did because it definitely changed my path. So it was a biotech outreach. It was called Buzz for Biotech or Buzz on Biotech at Georgia Tech. And they had all these different demos about biotech that the different labs were going on. And I... one in particular caught my eye, which was the McDevitt lab demo, and they were showing some stem cells that they had differentiated into cardiac cells, and they were beating on the dish like a heart. There's literally like heart tissue beating. How do they do that? And it just blew my mind, and so I started reading all these different things about stem cells after that, and I had kind of just decided then and there that I was going to apply to Georgia Tech and do stem cell research. In my first semester of my freshman year, I got the nerve to ask Dr. McDevitt if I could work in his lab as an undergrad, and he luckily gave me a chance. And so starting like my second semester at Tech, I was doing research in his lab up until I graduated.
After finishing her master's at Georgia Tech, Katie moved to Norfolk, Virginia, and now essentially has two jobs that she balances, scientist and entrepreneur.
Now I am kind of wearing two different hats. So yeah, I'm a lab manager / research assistant in a lab at Old Dominion University. It's a telomere biology lab, so that's been really interesting and kind of definitely a different topic that I've been learning a lot about, and it's been good. My other morning, night, and evening job that I do whenever I have free time is I am the executive director of a nonprofit that I co-founded with people back in Atlanta, and it's called BioIgnite. And so BioIgnite, it's a nonprofit, and our mission is to develop students' interest in biomedical sciences at an earlier age. And we do this by integrating an innovative curriculum with expert teachers, which are graduate students typically, and by integrating exposure to careers all within a 1-week-long camp for middle school students.
So what was the process like to get BioIgnite off the ground? Did it start as a camp, or was your initial concept completely different from that?
Yeah, so it was quite the process. And so we initially just started the group of fellow graduate students and myself. We were going out into high schools just volunteering our time in high schools, teaching them about stem cells. And we were kind of finding it was a little difficult to do this, and so we ended up developing a tool to help teach, help us teach high schoolers about stem cells. And it was really great. The kids loved it. We loved it. Teachers loved it. And we're like, this is awesome. We need to try to get this out to every high schooler. And so we came across a call for applications for a special grant that the National Science Foundation awards called Innovation Core for Learning. And so we applied for that grant. So the whole purpose of that grant is NSF basically realizes there are a lot of great STEM education tools or programs out there, and they keep giving them money to help sustain them, to help increase STEM education in the U.S., right? But it's obviously better if they can try to have each person find a way to commercialize it and to make it into a more sustainable business so that the government doesn't have to keep funding them with grant money to keep their businesses or programs afloat.
You can learn more about the NSF iCORE program in our show notes, but essentially it's a program that prepares scientists and engineers to extend ongoing education and research projects into the commercial world. So it's really interesting. It promotes the translation of technologies that will have direct benefits for both the economy, but also for society. So they take both of those components into consideration. And the program includes a curriculum that provides guidance from established entrepreneurs and gives training to participants. So Katie told me a little bit more about her experience.
It's a 7-week program. And so as a team, you're interviewing over 100 potential customers that would want your product. So it was definitely over 7 weeks. It was a lot of work, but they're also, while you're doing all these interviews, they're also putting you through basically a 7-week course on entrepreneurship, and teaching you about business models. And they use something called the Business Model Canvas, which is a whole nother podcast.
Essentially, the Business Model Canvas is a template for developing new or documenting existing business models, and it was first proposed by Alexander Osterwalder in 2008. In 2012, Stephen Blank expanded on these concepts in his book, The Startup Owner's Manual, which Katie's team followed.
It's a very scientific approach to creating a business, so you're creating hypotheses, and then you're interviewing your customers to test these different hypotheses, or you're making A/B tests to test different hypotheses that you think is correct. So, long story short, our process, we started going into it thinking we were going to try to find a way to commercialize this stem cell Plinko, is what it's called. That was the tool we used to teach stem cells to students. And what we ended up figuring out was that there's not really a room in the classroom for it, mostly because classrooms are so focused on standards and testing. And if stem cells aren't in the curriculum and on the test, then it's not going to really get a priority in the classroom.
So the hypothesis and test process worked for Katie's team. They found out that their original market was most likely not there. They would have to look elsewhere. She told me that they thought about homeschoolers and museums, but those markets also didn't really have a high enough demand for her beloved stem cell Plinko.
There was still a need to teach the kids about these advanced science topics like stem cells. But the classrooms weren't going to be the place for it. And one place that seemed to be quite profitable were summer camps and summer and after-school programs, and mostly summer camps, though. Mm-hmm. And we did some research, and there really aren't very many summer camps focused on biotech and biomedical sciences. So we, through all of our interviews, we were able to find like a new need, basically, and we decided that would be something that we would enjoy developing, and so we formed BioIgnite.
Cool.
After almost a year of market research and program development, BioIgnite launched this summer. When I spoke with Katie, the first camp had just wrapped up.
Yeah, so it went great. I didn't really realize just how much the kids were like, really liked it until on the last day, all of the parents all came, and the parents were like, "Oh my goodness, he couldn't stop talking about it every time he came home." Or I was like always looking forward to dinner because I couldn't wait to hear what cool thing you guys did today. And it was just, the parents were really excited about it, and the kids were obviously very excited about it too. And it went pretty smoothly. There were, of course, a couple of hiccups, but in general, I think it went really well. As far as kind of the biggest lesson we learned is that the kids really, some of the things we tried to, that we were teaching, we weren't really sure if they would be able to get it, but the kids could definitely understand a lot more than you would first give them credit for. So they definitely have the potential to understand these higher topics. And so I think from a curriculum standpoint, I think they sometimes think, like, you can't teach them about stem cells if you haven't taught them about cell organelles or about what mitochondria are, and, like, they haven't memorized every single part of a cell. But they don't really need to know all of that to really understand the use of stem cells and the potential of them. So it's been, from a curriculum development standpoint, we've been trying to, like, knowing what they do know already and what they don't know, like, how can we teach them about these exciting things in a way that they, that is useful for them, but also that they can understand.
Cool. So what are your favorite parts of the camp?
Well, Stem Cell Plinko did make it into the curriculum. But I'm a little biased on them. But I kind of love all the activities a little bit. I think one of my favorite is probably it's a biomaterials activity where they make alginate of different stiffnesses, and they can actually do like a lot of testing. Like, we give them 3 different concentrations of alginate, and we give them 2 cups of clear liquid and one obviously has calcium in it and one's just water. And so they're kind of testing, they get to test, because basically the way alginate works is when you take an alginate solution and put it in calcium, it cross-links it and forms a biomaterial, forms a gel, and that's used in a lot of biomaterials. And so they were actually able to do that and actually see the gel cross-link in front of their eyes, and one of them's really hard and one of them's really gooey, like snot, and the kids just think it's gross. It's so fun.
As you might remember, Katie attended a similar type of camp hosted by Georgia Tech when she was in high school, and it completely changed her trajectory. I wondered if she sees herself in the kids that she's working with.
When I run the camps, I just, like, see the excitement on all of the kids' faces, and that you can tell that they've just never heard of this before, and it's kind of opened up a whole new world for them. It's definitely a good full circle moment.
So say that we want to get gene A into the other plasmid, plasmid B. Does anybody have any ideas of how we would do it? Yep.
You would snip around the gene.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would snip the part where,
yep,
or just place it, and then you
just paste it in, right?
About how big are they?
Huh?
About how big are they?
They're very small. These are DNA, so they're tinier than you can see. And so these genes can vary in size. They can be really small genes or they can be really large genes, okay? But how we get it into the other plasmid, all we do is we cut the gene out. It's that simple, right? Just cut and paste. So we just cut it out, and then we take plasmid B and we cut it open and we just paste it inside. Does that make sense? Yeah.
But cutting and pasting isn't as simple as it might
think. Well, so, correct. So this is more complicated cutting and pasting, and I'm going to go into a little bit of how we do that, okay?
In addition to learning about where her own project fit in the educational space, Katie also absorbed information about STEM education more generally. I wanted to know what she thinks about the current system and what challenges exist.
Yeah, so STEM education is most starts really to be focused on in high school right now, if even. There's really isn't as much of a focus on STEM education at all in elementary and middle school. Even though studies have shown that if you want to increase a student's performance in STEM and likelihood to go into STEM careers, that the earlier you can expose them to STEM, the better. So even elementary school is probably a better time than maybe middle school. So definitely earlier the better. Part of the reason why is that there's just so many things that they test kids on and so many standards that they have to cross off their list that there's just not as much time to be teaching these unless they were to create a separate class or something. Another thing that we kind of found when we were trying to see if this could be, if we could work with elementary and middle school teachers, is that they don't necessarily feel, the teachers themselves don't always necessarily feel competent in higher level STEM topics. In general, a lot of teachers who have science and math backgrounds typically will teach in high school. And so if the more specialized teachers are in high school, and so the ones that, if you want them to be teaching STEM in elementary and middle, you have to do a lot of teacher training to get them to feel competent to teach whatever curriculum you want them to teach. And so if the teacher doesn't feel confident, then it's not going to be an effective lesson for your student. So there's the teacher training aspect as well.
One really interesting new initiative that Katie told me about is the Next Gen Science Standards, which you can find a link to in our show notes. But it's a multi-state effort to create common standards for teaching in the U.S. and develop greater interest in science amongst students so that more of them choose careers in these fields. Overall, the guidelines are intended to help students more deeply understand core scientific concepts. So these curriculums may cover fewer topics overall, but will go more deeply into specific topics and use critical thinking and primary investigation to help students understand the scientific process and also be able to critically evaluate scientific evidence, which I think is really cool. What have you learned on the business side of things? What advice would you give to someone who's listening and thinking of starting their own business?
I think the first thing you have to make sure of is that you have a good product that your customers need, right? And so getting back to what I did last summer, talking to your customers is critical in order to have to develop a successful product and a successful business. So if you think your target customer are 30-year-old rich man, you need to make sure you're talking to 30-year-old rich men. Don't just think that you know what a 30-year-old rich guy wants or needs, or what his criteria for making different decisions are. You need to actually go interview them and figure out what exactly it is that you, what their needs are and what their problems are that you're solving. So I think it's critical if you're wanting to start a company is making sure you know your customers, and if you're getting kind of some if your testing isn't really confirming your product, you either need to change your target market or pivot your product. And I think that's probably the biggest thing that I've learned through this whole process.
What are your short and long-term goals for BioIgnite? What directions do you see the nonprofit going in?
So short-term, I just want to get through these first three camps and have successful camps. And then also, after we get through these camps this summer, we're wanting to start piloting after school programs and weekend programs so that we can have year-round programming, because right now if we want to be a sustainable company year-round and not just a basically seasonal company, which would be what a summer camp would be, we need to find a way to actually generate revenue year-round, and that's most likely going to be through weekend programs or after-school programs. So we're going to be testing that out this next year. Long-term, we're hoping to establish strong relationships with community centers and other nonprofits in the area, in the Atlanta area, so that we can hopefully start reaching out to populations that wouldn't normally be have access to these STEM programs, so that we can reach a wider net of people and encourage all people into STEM. And we'd also eventually like to expand to multiple cities outside of Atlanta.
As you may have picked up from this interview so far, Katie is someone who pays a lot of attention to what's going on in her community. When we lived in London, she even organized us to do a STEM teaching event at a nearby rehabilitation center for people who were transitioning from homelessness to jobs. I'm always interested in what causes are currently near and dear to her heart.
It's a good question. So I've always been, a topic I've always been interested in is just in general, like women's work-life balance and careers. I'm specifically lately have been kind of intrigued about the problems that tend to plague military spouses, because I am a military spouse myself. And so I kind of have seen firsthand how difficult it can be to balance your career with really your country's needs, right? It's not even like your spouse's needs. It's when you're a military spouse, it's your country's needs. In a way.
Yeah.
That's intense. It's kind of hard to say that it's hard to prioritize your career in that aspect when you have to move every 3 years. And so just with all, I've met some amazing women and men who are all military spouses that have found ways to have really successful careers. And some people kind of gave up on that career. And now I feel like they really have kind of almost lost their identity in a really sad way.
Wow, that's really hard.
And so I think it's just there are a lot of really good initiatives going on that are trying to encourage military spouse entrepreneurs that create jobs that they can move around with them every 3 years, and trying to come up with alternative careers that would be good for military spouses. But it's something that I do think a lot, and I find myself discussing with people a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, you would think maybe a teacher would be like the most mobile career, right? That would be a common career of military spouses. But even a teacher, you have to get recertified in each state. And so those recertifications can cost like $1,000 each. And so it's not necessarily easy to do that way either. And there has been just recently, they have, I forget what the program is called, but Obama just announced this new initiative they're doing where they are trying to make certain certifications for military spouses to be, for each state has their own way to almost forgive. If you're certified in one state, then you can be certified in another state. And so I don't know specifically which careers they are, but that is something that they're working towards.
And finally, I wanted to know what Katie thinks are the best ways for practicing scientists to give back to others and support the next generation of students interested in STEM.
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say the easiest is to look in your very own lab first. You probably have some undergrads or maybe some summer students, or maybe even some labs will have high schoolers come in for a week. I think starting there and making sure you can, or making sure you're being a good mentor to them. There's ways that you can try to improve your mentorship skills, and don't always think about having an undergrad as you getting something out of that experience. Really take it as an opportunity to make sure you can talk to them about what their career goals are and talk to them about what classes they're taking, and be as good as you can starting in your own lab. Other things are look around at your university and see what programs are already established. You would be really surprised on how many there are if you start asking around. I was reading a recent article that was talking about UVA, University of Virginia, in their engineering department. They did a survey where they asked everyone in their engineering department about different outreach programs, and they found that they had 50 programs going on in their engineering department, which surprised everyone in the department, because no one had really heard of all of these outreach programs, but just ranging from professors going to talk about the research and classes to established programs, there were 50. So you wouldn't be surprised if you start asking around what's already being done. Many schools will also have like career days, and so that could also be a great time where you can go and talk about your company, and your company also might be okay with you going to do it on the clock, since it's a company, you're kind of advertising for the company in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's usually smiled upon.
Thanks so much, Katie, for joining us today on Double Shelix. You can learn more about the topics we covered in today's conversation at doubleshelix.com in the show notes for this episode. Mm-hmm.